Translation. Sutta Goswami said, Maharaj Pariksit, thus being petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution and animal slaughter were performed. Purport. The basic principles of irreligiosity, such as pride, prostitution, intoxication and falsehood, counteract the four principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercifulness, mercy and truthfulness. The personality of Kali was given permission to live in four places particularly mentioned by the king, namely the place of gambling, the place of prostitution, the place of drinking, and the place of animal slaughter. Srila Jiva Goswami directs that drinking against the principles of scriptures, such as the Sotramani Yajna, association with women outside marriage, and killing animals against the injunctions of scriptures, are irreligious. In the Vedas, two different types of injunctions are there for the pravrittas, or those who are engaged in material enjoyment, and for the nivrittas, those who are liberated from material bondage. The Vedic injunction for the pravrittas is to gradually regulate their activities towards the path of liberation. Therefore, for those who are in the lowest stage of ignorance and who indulge in wine, women and flesh, drinking by performing Sotramani Yajna, association of women by marriage, and flesh eating by sacrifices are sometimes recommended. Such recommendations in the Vedic literature are meant for a particular class of men and not for all. But because they are injunctions of the Vedas for a particular type of persons, such activities by the pravrittas are not considered adharma. One man's food is another man's poison, may be a poison for others. Similarly, what is recommended for those in the mode of ignorance may be poison for those in the mode of goodness. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu therefore affirms that recommendations in the scripture for a certain class of men are never to be considered adharma or irreligious, but such activities are factually adharma, and they are never to be encouraged. The recommendations in the scriptures are not meant for encouragement of such adharma, but for regulating the necessary adharma gradually toward the path of dharma. Following the footsteps of Maharaj Pariksit, it is the duty of all executive heads of state to see that the principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy and truthfulness, are established in the state, and that the principle of religion, namely pride, illicit female association or prostitution, intoxication and falsity, are checked by all means, and to make the best use of a bad bargain, the personality of Kali may be transferred to places of gambling, drinking, prostitution and slaughterhouses, if there are any places like that. Those who are addicted to these irreligious habits may be regulated by the injunctions of the scripture. In no circumstance should they be encouraged by any state. In other words, the state should categorically stop all sorts of gambling, drinking, prostitution and falsity. The state, which wants to eradicate corruption by majority, may introduce the people of religion in the following manner. 1. Two compulsory fasting days in a month, if not more, austerity. Even from the economic point of view, such two fasting days in a month in the state will save tons of food, and the system will also act very favorably on the general health of the citizens. 2. There must be compulsory marriage of young boys and girls attaining 24 years of age and 16 years of age respectively. There is no harm in co-education in the schools and colleges, provided the boys and girls are duly married, and in case they are in intimate connection between a male and a female student, they should be married properly without illicit relation. The Divorce Act is encouraging prostitution, and this should be abolished. 3. The citizens of the state must give in charity up to 50% of their income for the purpose of creating a spiritual atmosphere in the state or in human society, both individually and collectively. They should preach the principles of Bhagavatam by A. Karma Yoga, or doing everything for the satisfaction of the Lord, B. regular hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam from authorized persons or realized souls. Om Gyanati Marandasya Gyanandana Salakya Saksura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this lecture is within the context of a particular theme. I was asked to do that in the next few days, to speak on the theme of living with vows. I've in the past given seminars on that topic, also in very different settings. Some were like classroom seminars with flip charts and slide and PowerPoint presentations, and sort of going quite broad. Other times we discussed the topic. It was in a forum of a retreat where we had plenty of time and where we would take opportunities to do interactive things with groups through acting and all kinds of creative ways, by workshops. So a seminar on living with vows in the context of a Bhagavatam class has a flavor of its own, right? It's so each of these different ways of discussing the topic may be very different, but of course there will also be some similarities. I'll use some common material. First of all, a topic such as living with vows is an essential topic. It is relevant to all. Anyone who comes in contact with the Hare Krishna movement in some way or other is becoming confronted immediately with the regulative principles, the four regulative principles. Therefore, I thought I'd start with that, and therefore I took the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the basis of these four regulative principles. If we ask, where did Srila Prabhupada actually get this from, these four regulative principles? Especially if we consider that previously it may not have been stressed in the same way as Srila Prabhupada stressed it, not even in our Sampradaya. We see a whole line of disciplic successions, 32 generations up to Srila Prabhupada. And it's really not like that, and then Narada Muni came and chanted on the beats of Vyasadeva and set him down in a sacrifice, and then called Vyasadeva up to the front and asked him, what are the four regulative principles? And Vyasadeva, and he spoke these four regulative principles. No, nothing like that. In fact, even Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's direct spiritual master, didn't conduct initiations in that way. Even he didn't ask, what are the four regulative principles and how many rounds? It was particularly Srila Prabhupada who formalized it in that way. So that's interesting to consider. And of course, Srila Prabhupada just presented the four regulative principles as like a major, one might say, a major point in the presentation of this movement. It's very much in the forefront, very, very much. And, based on this particular verse, where we understand that if these principles are not followed, that we're dealing with the four principles of irreligion, and that Kali has opportunity to enter. At that point, that basically one becomes taken over by Kali. What that means, I think we all have an idea because we can see it in everyday life, what it means to be taken over by Kali. In the Mahabharata, there's also an early reference to Kali. It's the first appearance of Kali outside of his normal assigned time period, which is the Kali Yuga. It's said that Kali, there in Mahabharata, it is stated Kali is residing in the celestial planets and is in that sense together with the personified deities of other yugas residing there and is under the jurisdiction or within the jurisdiction of Indra. Somehow or other there was a king named Nala who had a very pious wife named Damayanti, and this king Nala, he somehow or other displeased Indra. So then Kali took advantage of it and got permission from Indra to influence this Nala. And it was quite something. Nala became a complete debauchee after Kali entered. He left his wife unprotected in the middle of a forest. He couldn't care less, you know, just dumped her. And he himself came down to a level of a rakshasa. So all principles out of the window. So indeed, it's obvious that it will be difficult to practice spiritual life as long as there is the influence of Kali. At the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada gives a number of points which he thinks should be introduced in any state in the world. Two compulsory days of fasting, Ekadasi obviously, compulsory marriage, young boys, young girls, attaining respectively 24 years and 16 years of age, and citizens should give in charity up to 50% of their income to create a spiritual atmosphere in human society. Like this, Srila Prabhupada is basically putting forward the regulative principles, the four regulative principles, as something that is relevant to everyone in society. It's also clear from the purport that not everyone is expected to be on the level of the four regulative principles, but they will stand as a standard, which is desirable. And anyone who is really below is tolerated, but it is not at all encouraged. I remember that when I first used to go to India in early 70s, that there was heavy, heavy restriction on alcohol. And basically there were no shops where alcohol was being sold. There were little government-controlled points from where alcohol was available. And people could go there, but they had to enter their name in a register. They had to present an ID, and it was written their name, an ID number, and everything was written down. And it was written down how much was allotted to them. And then there was a tiny little window, like a ticket window or something, with bars. And then a small little bottle, one of those sort of, in England, you know, the stuff they take to the football match in the pockets, you know, one of these small pocket bottles or a little swig during the match. You know, one of those bottles, right, with a sort of, came from under a shelf, a hand comes through the bars, and someone would walk away with his asset, right? So that was India, right? In the early 70s. So not so long ago, in the early 70s here in England, things were a little different. And here you go, chat. I mean, the British bucket with a handle for drinking beer, of course, is sort of part of the culture. You see people sitting with literally vases of alcohol in front of them, right? Three or four at the same time, right? Drinking stale beer. Anyway, what can be said? So I'm not going to make this a lecturing on the four regulative principles in detail and go graphically on all of them. I'll leave it at this. I wanted to go into a metaphor, and in that metaphor I wanted to take an ocean. And the ocean, on the water level of the ocean, I wanted to put the four regulative principles. And then we have below is what we can call deep sea life. Right? Below the four regulative principles, deep sea life. And then we have the sky above the four regulative principles. We'll get there. Let's first get ready and inspect the marine world and go in there and see what's going on under the surface of the regulative principles. Well, rock bottom, of course. Rock bottom, there we have all the animalistic type of life where there is no regulative principle at all. Above it, we start to get these regulated yajñas of the Vedas that are sort of mentioned and so on. And we even get vegetarians, but yes, even that's not good enough, of course. Yakyasistatino santa muchante sarvakilbisai, still karma involved. It must be yakyasista, remnants of sacrifice, if you really want to go beyond sinful life. So, anyway. The water level in our ocean are the four regulative principles, okay? Keep in mind, that's where we are, right? So below is deep sea life and, you know, all the aquatics that are there, octopuses and sharks and so on. We see them. We see them all around us, especially in big cities. They manifest in large numbers and... Again, since I'm have some time constraint, I leave these things. I could go graphic on all these details and make it juicy, of course, but then suddenly it will be 8:20 and I will still have not gone very far, and they say at 8:30 sharp people walk out of the door. Right? That's the rumor that has been sort of spread to me. You can go on, give the class as long as you like, but it may be to the walls. All right. Was the hint. I got that. So it's 8:30, it will be, not a second over, you know. No way now. Where do I take it from here? Well, I don't want to spend too much time under the surface. Other than that, under the surface of the regulative principles, I must put fall downs. Fall downs are like people who were sort of on the surface, but somehow or other go under every once in a while. Now, there are different ways of going under. There are people who are trying to keep head above water, but every once in a while they go under. There are guys that just go head over heels and straight down. Right, Maya, here I come, you know. And some are determined to never come up again and tie a heavy weight on their leg, and well, adios, amigo. What can we say? Funeral at sea. That may also be there. So below the surface, there is plenty of stuff to do. And of course, you can see the ingredients for a seminar are there where you can play around with it. And now I would click and then my PowerPoint would shoot right up and show you a few little clips, you know, 5 minutes movies, what to do. Well, as I was preparing for the seminar, I had a secretary at the time, and he was kind of young, you know, below 20, and he looked it, you know. I mean, he still looked sort of a little, well, very young, right? So these days, I even look at policemen like kids, you know. That's where I'm at now. I see a cop, and I think, that's a kid. Yeah. So naturally, I also thought of my my secretary like that. Well, 19, still a kid. So I got a camera, put it on video, put it on Zoom lens, and then said, well, what do you think of living with vows? I gave him no prior warning and just put the camera on his face straight on the airport. And he goes, like, well, you know, I think it's really good, you know. I mean, I think it gives you strength and so on. Okay, I put the camera on Zoom lens and go straight into his face and say, is it easy to live with vows? He started sweating a little bit and sort of waffled his way out of the question. I admit, it was mean. But, you know, that's what journalists do. So since this was my job now, to be the journalist, I thought it was fair. So I got my clip. Then in my PowerPoint, we were actually on the way to New York, you know, which sort of was good. So we came to New York, and I visited someone in the Marriott Hotel on Times Square, which is like one of the best views you get of New York, really. If you want to see New York, go somewhere to the 10th floor in the Marriott Hotel and just stand in front of the window and look at Times Square. You need no LSD, right? Because every building on the side has one of these electronic billboards all the way from the bottom to the top, and it's moving in color, in full color, right? All around you, you know. So it's like, I mean, phew, it reminds me of those guys that put 25 in the teapot and drank the tea. I think that's what they must have seen. Anyway, so it was a great view, and I took a picture of that too. And then in my PowerPoint, I put my little video clip right in the middle of New York, right? And there he was, you know, the boy explaining how, well, yes, is it easy to live with vows? Well, not always, but, you know, and then there's New York all around him. In the next slide, there was an ocean, there was an ocean full of crocodiles. Full of crocodiles. And then came that, from the sky descended that verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is explaining that by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, even an ignorant child can swim across the ocean, which is filled with the crocodiles of all kinds of speculative theories. I thought that this is really what we're facing. We're facing a hell of a world. Right? New York is the best symbol of it all because it sort of summarizes everything is there. And London is also sort of trying to keep up with the Joneses. So in that respect, although from an Amsterdam perspective, things are a bit tame here. But anyway, you know. What shall I say? London is offering a sufficient opportunity to create a lot of tension. So how much tension are we facing immediately with these four regulative principles just in terms of our environment? So this is a major problem we're having. The environment is so diametrically opposed to what we are trying to follow. That's like very, very difficult. And even subtly. I remember when I was a brahmachari, And I, it was in those days, all the laundry of the whole temple would go on one big pile, and then it was tied in a huge cloth. And then I was like, well, like the donkey of the dhobi in India, you know. You see this pile of laundry with a few little legs under it. And that was me in this case. In India, it's the donkey. And I was going off to the laundromat, you know, and I dropped it off. And we had to deal with the lady, and she was cleaning up the whole thing. And then at night, she had to pick it up. Now, opposite of the laundromat, there was the Dutch Society for Sexual Reform. You can't imagine what that's like. It's, first of all, it's Dutch, and then all that sexual reform. Straight in the face, right? They had all these advertisements, different posters, you know, like children doing it, or, you know, adults doing it, or two others, men to men, women to women. And all of them were asking, like, you know, I mean, aren't you, are you sure? Are you sure? This is not in you, actually. Are you very sure? And if you're not sure, if you're not completely sure that this is not a little bit you, then call this number anonymously. And, you know, as I was young, I could remember any number just at sight. So it was it was like not an easy place. It was straight in the face. It was heavy. Heavy. Nowadays, it's even trickier. Because nowadays, you just go into your room and you surf a little bit on the web. Right? You know. And just at the flick of a finger, you switch screens, you know, right? Multiple windows open at the same time, and just one button makes you jump from the bona fide, from the non-bona fide window through a bona fide one. Right? Ah, plenty of slips there on the internet, right? It's become like a huge problem also in our movement. The internet certainly is one of the octopuses that grabs even people who innocently stick their foot in the water. Right? They just get pulled under very much. So Some temples have put like these kind of programs for monitoring children who surf on the internet, right? Temple presidents have invested in these kind of parent monitoring programs, and here we are, Hare Krishnas, treated like children.
Hare Krishna, Prabhus.
We have all the four. It remembers. It reminds me a little bit of a certain. There was a trend in our movement. I will not manage mention names because it's not appropriate in a public forum to mention names. Some of you who are familiar with history can guess, though, you know, to make it a little exciting. But there was a particular. There was a particular zone, because in those days, ISKCON consisted of 11 zones, right? And there was one of those zones, right, where particularly they had very rigid strictures on illicit sex. And it was almost like the sex squad, you know. All right. You know, okay, what's going on? A badge here, and all right, pull her over. Yes. At one point, they took the doors of the bathroom, which I personally feel is a bit obscene, if you ask me. But anyway, they did, right? Because the whole idea was that we should not offer any opportunity for any hanky-panky, right? So no doors on the bathroom anymore, no. They took it further than that, right? Two in a room, didn't matter which two, you know, two in a room, out of the question, right? Out of the question. One must be at all times above suspicion, Prabhu. at all times, no less than three, because they might not have been familiar with trios and all the things that are going on. Because if you go that way, even three, you know, can do a whole thing, you know. Yeah. So I remember that at one point I was in the zone. I was in the zone, and Grihasthas were fundamentally suspicious, and that's what I was in those days. So I was severely under suspicion. Yeah. And so I recall the temple president called me in the office. He stood up behind his desk. He put on some heavy-rimmed glasses. Looked me straight in the eye with a piercing look and said, "Are you doing it? Tell me now, are you doing it?" Which, of course, brings the best out of someone. Doing what? You may think that I'm making it up, but I'm not. Right? I'm not. And there even was a caravan where Grihasthas who were engaging in sex according to religious principles had the opportunity to do so with a kirtan around the caravan at the same time. And if it took too long, the brahmacharis would throw bricks against the kirtan, okay? Even this was going on in one of the temples of the zone. History has seen interesting phenomena, right, in the past. What shall we say? So what is the... These four regulative principles are certainly not easy to follow. And we have seen we have seen heavy monitoring systems, policing systems to sort of try and keep guarantee the purity. Because this doesn't kind of, such systems, they don't really encourage maturity. They don't really encourage people in embracing these spiritual standards, right, as something that they will commit to out of strong faith. In the days that I was thinking about this seminar of living with vows, I thought one thing we need, one thing devotees need, and that is, I'm going straight to the tough principle, illicit sex. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's not waste time since we don't have it. Let's deal with principle number four, right? Illicit sex. I think that what we need from our devotees is a declaration of no faith in sex. At least that much. I think everyone has to get to that point. Because if we have faith in it, that we may be addicted to it, that we may be attracted to it, that we may feel the pushings, tongue, belly, genitals, that may be there, but we should not have faith in it. No faith that there's any happiness there, that there's real happiness there. Maybe there's enjoyment, but enjoyment and happiness are not equivalents, right? Enjoyment, yes, but enjoyment can be a great setup for becoming very dissatisfied. It is a fact that if you get too much enjoyment, afterwards, when it's over, the withdrawal symptoms take you through hell. And so, therefore, a society based on too much sense enjoyment is a setup for suffering, not an arrangement for enjoying, as we know very well. And a society which limits the enjoyment to the natural type of enjoyment that is provided in nature, without trying to add so much artificial in man-made enjoyment, that kind of society will have more opportunity for satisfaction, actually, for inner satisfaction. Okay, I'm throwing around some quick, heavy statements, because if you try to put a lot of material in just a few lectures, well, then you have to be selective, and you sort of throw a few stones in the pond, which is the consciousness of the listener. Right? You try make a few waves, and that's about it, and hope that that will be food for thought. So, today I'm speaking about scriptures, four regulative principles. I'm speaking about the world that is not supporting us. So we need to create our own little subculture. Otherwise, we're not going to make it, right? For sure. We need to insulate ourselves. Okay. Lock ourselves in big mansions, right? Somewhere on the edge of the city. Fences and gates that are locked, and bar it all out, right? Nothing in. Lock out the world. And especially, and watch out for the internet, and beware of the advertisements, the billboards, right? Close your eyes, look in another, don't look twice. That is the principle. The first time when you see it, it can be by accident, of course, although you might know which side of the road to look to. But it could be by accident. But the second time you look, it's illicit sex, Prabhu. It the second time. Smaranam Keli Prexanam, right? Eight types of illicit sex are mentioned. I'm now mentioning the first three. Remembering, playing around a bit, and joking about it. Keli, joking about, and Prexanam, looking. Tongue starts hanging and eyes bulging. So to insulate ourselves. But if that's going to be our solution, then it's going to be tough. Then we should all get a wool hat and permanently pull it over the eyes. But, you know, you may have heard the proverb, right? That for how long can you pull the wool over the eyes of the people? That's difficult, quite difficult. It gets stuffy at one point, really. There comes a point in time where even these cameras nowadays, you can't even... And people blow it up, they post it on the internet, it's absolutely too much. I mean, in one lecture, I did this. I do it very quick these days. Anyway, I did. And then the next thing that happened is somebody blew it up to the size of the wall. And I walk in a temple and I see my picture as bigger than that painting, right? I mean, the world's gone to the dogs. No, but pulling the wool over the eyes. So is this our process? Just pulling the wool over our own eyes. But sooner or later, we're going to have to face reality. It's going to come back. And this is the stage where devotees come to. One day, I came to a particular temple in the world. Again, no names, no place mentioned. But this particular temple was in a coastal town, though. And I came there, all my travels around the world, so there's no giveaway as where it could be, all right? Because we swamis, we come in every nook and corner. I came there, and when I arrived, the temple president wasn't there, so I asked, oh, where is so-and-so? And he said, oh, he's gone to the beach. I said, okay, you know, didn't think much of it, you know, everyone needs his R&R, right? And then somebody said, 3 days ago. I said, oh, really? Oh, dear. I heard he went to the beach and that he was still there. And in fact, that he hadn't changed location. He had gone to the beach 3 days ago, sat down in front of the ocean, and he was still sitting there. So, well, you know, always being eager for an excuse to go to the beach, I was ready, you know. So I volunteered straight away and said, well, let's go to the beach. And off I went. And yes, I saw my good friend sitting there in front of the ocean, looking out over the ocean. And I sort of, I sat down next to him. And he was in deep silence, so I respected it. I didn't even say Haribo, I just sat down. And after about, 15 minutes, I sort of said, nice view, isn't it? Sort of, you know, got to start somewhere. And we started our conversation, and really, to make it short, because 8:30 is coming close, what happened was that this particular person, he had been living with all the codes of Krishna consciousness, and one day it just hit him, you know? It just hit him. He had been faithfully surrendering and following anything, and just one day he thought, who am I? Who am I really? And that's when he went to the beach and sat down and looked at that ocean. And while the waves were washing in, it was echoing in his head, really, really, really. Yeah, so this indeed was it is not an unusual experience, okay? Not everyone goes to the beach. Some devotees have very unique ways of expressing themselves when they come to this point. But it does seem to come. It does seem to come for most, right? That they sort of, on the path, suddenly bump into themselves. And then what? It's scary when someone comes around the corner and it's you. And then you stop face to face with yourself. It's a very scary moment. And that moment, it generally comes. And then what? So that's sort of where I'm taking it in this first session. Now, of course, opening up for a little feedback from your side, just doesn't really matter. Go ahead. Yes, Tatovic, shoot. He usually shoots. Yeah, that's a very famous quote. I won't make a comment now. That's very nice. Anyone else wants to? Yes. All right, guys, are you ready? Put on put on your swimming suit. You know, we're going to dive into the ocean of Nessians. It's got to happen anyway. You know, I mean, like, boys and girls, get ready for it. What can be done? You know, it's inevitable, and we may as well just be honest about it. What can repression accomplish? Let's hear from the local sages. Creeper Mai, what do you think of that? Let's all jump in hand, off the cliff we go. Haribo, what can we do? Make sure you have a submarine, okay? We all, anyway, live in a yellow submarine. Yes. Ah, like Bhakti Tirthamaraj. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, just like the example of somebody like Bhakti Tirthamaraj, who was brahmachari, who just followed the principles for life, and who just left this planet in such an amazing way. Or just like Sridhar Maharaj, who at the end of his life was lying on bed in Mayapur with his huge belly all bloated, right? And almost unconscious, someone touched it, and then finally opened his eyes and said, "It's a boy." And then that Sridhar Maharaj, who had a good sense of humor till the very end, right? He also said, "I've been a good boy. I've been a good boy." He said, "I've been a good boy." He said, and he was smiling, you know. And he left the world like on that note, you know. Been a good boy. Didn't fall down. Been a good boy. And you can see what kind of departure was granted to him for being a good boy, right? His desire fulfilled, panchatattva installed, still standing up for the installation and pouring buckets of all kinds of ecstatic ingredients over panchatattva and so on, getting that incredible taste of nectar, and then gracefully leaving, in Mayapur Dham. So, boys and girls, should we really do it? In Amsterdam, by the way, they have bungee jumping. And I heard that in London you have it too, but I don't know if you're as advanced as the Amsterdam city has gone yet, because in Amsterdam it's now boys and girls, they stand on top of the crane together in like going in a deep embrace, right? And then they go down together. Down together. Well, if your relationship doesn't work anymore, try that. It brings people really close. That's for sure. So is it something like that? Is it like, are we going to embrace each other and do some bungee jumping? My advice is we should be... No, I don't think that fall down is inevitable. I think fall down is... we have to deeply look into what are the reasons for fall down. I would say, and tomorrow I will make that my theme, a lot of lack of culture. Culture, and I'll give you a little preview of tomorrow, since that's what you do anyway in TV series. preview is there. Well, when I looked at vows, I thought vows look very different according to the environment. If I have to live in a red light district and with vows, it's going to be different than if I live in a Chopati Brahmachari ashram. They're going to have a different thing. So environment is a big thing. And it says that anthropology says that man is suspended between nature and culture. These two. And that is like where we are. Right? And then culture, we can take the definition of culture in two ways. We can look at culture in one way in the sense of, as we commonly know it from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we can look at culture in terms of cultivation, Krishna Anushilanam. We can look at it like that, cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Or we can look at culture as a means to express our desires within certain boundaries of safety. Just like Vedic culture, where men and women had ways that they were interacting, even socially. You see these pastimes in the village of Vrindavan described, throwing the cowherd men throwing butter on the cowherd ladies, right? There's definitely a male-female exchange going on there, which in our movement we wouldn't have, by the way. But in that Vrindavan setting, it was all right. That was permissible, but there were clear boundaries. It couldn't go beyond that. Yeah? And no one would go beyond that because everyone was acting according. So I think that the cultural side is very underdeveloped and very poor in our movement. In the days that I joined, it was like, okay, you are not married. No, okay, then you are a brahmachari. Here's your cloth, saffron, everything, and don't let us catch you talk to any women privately and so on. You know, it's like that was about it, right? There was like the prohibition and heavy repercussions behind it, and that was about sink or swim. You know, just figure it out. Nothing, no support whatsoever. Now, of course, we have all kinds of training, all kinds of education, all kinds of handbooks, all kinds of things. But still, we don't have much of a culture. If we would develop more culture, not only in ISKCON, culture we've had and we've developed in terms of cultivation, but we have developed very little culture in terms of expression. That aspect of culture we have not really developed much. So then, you know, like we have to live with four regulative principles. It's like, we feel a little boxed in. So therefore culture as a means of expression is very important, with all the purity within it and so on. Right? That could help. Because if we make it too rigid, it becomes also a little tough. You can make life so austere that at one day it just explodes. Let's get one more reaction, and then it's 8:30. Yes, 8:30 never comes. Like Prabhupada speaks about that witness who was in the court, who was every year saying he was 43, and the next year again he was 43, and he always stayed 43. Right? So with me, it's almost 8:30. Well, tomorrow I will really elaborate on it, so I'm not going to elaborate on it too much, but very short then. It means that, of course, we have culture in terms of expression. We can walk around the kirtan and just express ourselves like anything. You know, you can grab a drum, you can scream out, "Haribo, Haribo, Haribo!" And devotees do, and I've seen all kinds of things. Someone, there used to be this South American brahmachari who used to do Hari Bol as a siren, right? And he was really good at it. And And so I lost my voice a little. But so I'm not going to do an imitation of the siren. I could when I'm in full shape. I owe it to you. Anyway, but he used to do it all the time. And then, you know, you got Mexicans calling out, arriba, arriba, arriba. You know. So kirtan definitely gives us opportunity for expression, you know. But, yeah, and then some South African comes in, yeah, boy, yeah, boy, yeah, boy. So the stuff you don't have. In kirtan, my spiritual master has a few words to say about that. Again, a topic I want open. So there is room to express ourselves, a personality. But still, we have to understand is that this movement, it came from India. It was transplanted onto the Lower East Side in New York, into the hippie culture, and then, you know, from all that sort of ISKCON began to develop, right? And gradually, you know, the hippies learned how to throw their chadras in more brahminical ways, and and we developed something called ISKCON, and I don't know exactly what it is, you know. I mean, it's not exactly, sometimes we speak about Vedic culture. Well, I can tell you one thing, we don't have it, right? Sorry about that for, you know, some of us who feel hurt by such statements. I have no intentions to hurt any of my listeners. What can I do? But, you know, the truth is painful sometimes. So, my point is that ISKCON has to find its identity. And ISKCON has gone through a lot. As a movement, we have a pure process. We have developed a way of life. But it's not ideal as yet. We have to develop it more. For all the ashrams, we have to develop it more. Yeah? We had, years ago in Mayapur, we started the first social development conference, and I liked it a lot, because at least the morning session I liked, because they had members of the different ashrams speak, and I remember everyone was a victim. The brahmachari was saying that, you know, I mean, it's like, it's not easy, you know, like when people are just all the time telling you the statistics are against you, you have no chance. You know, it's not exactly encouraging, right? So the brahmachari didn't feel encouraged. The sannyasi also had a problem because someone in a Bhagavatam had asked the question, how do we know that you're not going to fall down? So that was also heavy. We had some grihasthas who were tired of being second-class citizens. The women, they, you know, who felt mistreated, and so many things. And finally, a vanaprastha who said he had an identity crisis because he didn't exist. So. So that was good. It was a good conference. I liked it. So anyway, I'm just giving you that as an illustration that as a movement, there's some work to do to develop a better way of life. We've got a great, great philosophy. We've got incredible teachings. But we could do more work on developing a way of life. And that's called culture. And that's for tomorrow. And now, I guess I should stop, because 8:30 is approaching. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.